Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. Best of all, it's 100% free and ridiculously easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise on your podcast. That means you can get paid to podcast right away. In fact, that's what we're doing right now by reading this ad.
All we had to do was read 30 seconds, and they gave us some money.
I hope so.
Otherwise, we've been had.
Well, it only works if people listen. So
we've been bamboozled.
We have been bamboozled again. If you have a passion, if you have something you want to do, something you want to share with the world, something you think that you might be better than other people at, or just, you know, marginally talented at, I think we're
if you just like hearing yourself talk.
Oh, absolutely. Just pop over to Anchor. To get started, go to anchor.fm/start and join the Brew News crew and hundreds of others who want to share their passion with the world. That's anchor.fm/start. Welcome to the Brew News Podcast, all the news that's fit to be brewed. I'm Andrew Jennings.
And I'm Travis Matherly. Today we'll be taking a deep dive of Gibbs 100 Brewing. Gibbs is a local brewery here in Greensboro, North Carolina, and was started in 2014 by Mark and Sasha Gibb. Instead of doing online research, Mark was willing to sit down with us for a great interview. So sit back, relax, and enjoy our interview with Mark Gibb of Gibbs 100 Brewing.
Hey, Mark.
Hello.
Thank you so much for agreeing to interview with us. We're just going to do a quick, you know, not Travis. Travis isn't here. It's just me, Andrew. We're just going to do a quick interview. So you are the founder of Gibbs Brewing. Is that
correct? That's right.
Can you tell us a little bit more about Gibbs 100?
Yeah, I think as far as what we try to be as a brewery, we like to be a community brewery. And we get a whole bunch of events and things happening in our tap room, and we enjoy that. We like to connect with the community. And in terms of the beers that we brew, I think we do some crazy stuff from time to time, but we tend to brew true to style, mm-hmm. to the traditional styles. We kind of feel like if there's a style of beer that's been around for 300 years, there's probably a reason it's been around for 300 years. Probably people like it. And obviously we put our own spin and interpretation on those. Mm-hmm. We like to do a full range of styles, from hoppy beers to dark beers to a few sours and some lighter beers. Really kind of hit all the spots and for different beer drinkers, or just the same beer drinker who's in different moods, which I often am. But, you know, I think in terms of the styles that we put out, probably the one unifying theme is that I kind of think of us as a malt forward brewery. Mm-hmm. We like hops like everybody does, and certainly our IPAs are very hoppy, but they also have a nice malt backbone to them. And the beers that are styles that are malt forward styles, we tend to really shine on those. So, you know, some of our stouts and things, we'll use a lot of specialty grains to create a lot of complexity in the malt character. And so we get some pretty rave reviews for those beers.
Yeah, I really enjoy your milk stout. That's one of my favorites that you
Thank
guys
you.
Do. So you guys recently moved from a downtown location to the State Street location in Greensboro. Mm-hmm. Could you tell me a little bit about the move, if there's any reason for it, or just the new space is very lovely, by the way.
Sure. We had a lease that was going to be mm-hmm. coming up. The rent was going to be going way up. You know, we were kind of shoehorned into that space. It was a little difficult to keep up with production there. It was certainly difficult to get 18-wheelers in and out of that area to make grain deliveries and things. And I think the other thing is as far as the tap room, it was probably time for us to go. When we moved into that neighborhood, there wasn't a lot there, and we were kind of a destination for folks, and folks would come and sit for a couple of hours and bring their dogs and bring their kids and hang out and enjoy the space. By the time we left, there were a lot of bars in that neighborhood and became kind of a late night drinking and bar hopping kind of scene. And it's not really who we are. We're really just family friendly, dog friendly, and relax and play some board games and have a few beers. So. This is really more a suitable location.
All right, so we're back. We moved locations. It's a little bit quieter. So now we are back in the brew house proper. In your original location, how big was the brewery? How many barrels could you guys produce?
In terms of physical space, we had about 3,000 square feet for the brewery mm-hmm. over there, and here we have almost twice that.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, and I see, looking around, and I see all the canning and all the.
Yeah.
You were one of the first. Besides Natty Greens, and I guess Red Oak technically, in Greensboro that was doing production, like real
distribution type mm-hmm. production.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So walk me through that process, like when you went from brew pub, like, you know, we still have a couple of folks that really are just brew pubs only. Think about Joymongers. Mm-hmm. And
sure.
Prior, a little, to an extent, they're starting to distribute a little bit. Mm-hmm. But what was that like, making that transition from just brew pub to I'm selling my beer in cans across the city, and I guess just North Carolina now?
And we were pretty much distributing from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're not in cans initially. We were just distributing in kegs, but we were getting out all around town and all around Winston and a little bit into the Triangle and Charlotte
mm-hmm.
Before we... just on our own self-distributing before we finally did sign up with a distributor.
Okay.
And then we added the cans, and of course that really caused the distribution to take off. But that was always the goal from the beginning. You know, we have a kind of a large brew house. It's a 15-barrel
okay.
system, which, you know, the bottleneck for a brewery really isn't your brew house. It's how many tanks you have.
Yeah, your fermentation.
Because it's in the... it's in the brew house for 6 hours, and then it's in the tanks for 2 to 3 weeks. So that's your bottleneck. But 15-barrel system is reasonably large. You know, Natty Greens has an 18-barrel system.
That's it? And wow.
That's it. Now, they've got extra vessels and things mm-hmm. that enable them to cut their cycle time so they can do like 4 brews a day, every day.
Wow.
Kind of thing.
Okay.
It's a reasonably large system that we have. So... you know, at the time that we started, of course, there were about one third as many breweries as there are now. But I was actually manufacturing brewing equipment at the time.
Okay.
I was a home brewer for 20 years, but what got me kind of into the commercial end of this business was manufacturing tanks and brew houses for other breweries.
Okay.
Working for a company called SMT, Food and Beverage Systems, out of Martinsville, Virginia. And they're all U.S. made up there, and
so that explains the fermenter out in the on the front lawn.
Yeah,
which if you're not careful, I might take that. I'm realizing the bottleneck too. As a nascent home brewer,
well, unfortunately, that particular one is non-functional, which is why it's sitting out there. It actually got destroyed during our move.
Mm-hmm.
We brought in a refrigeration contractor to pump all the glycol out of the system.
Okay.
So that when we unhooked the tanks, we wouldn't have 200 gallons of glycol over the floor. And the gentleman hooked up with nitrogen gas to push the glycol out of the system. Unfortunately, he didn't have his regulator set properly. So instead of 30 pounds of nitrogen, it was 300 pounds.
Oh.
And it blew out the glycol jackets on the tank.
Yeah.
So now that's a very, very expensive lawn ornament now.
So. Okay. So you have the 15-barrel system. Do you have anything for like running test batches and pilot brewing as well?
Just a small system that we do like 10-gallon batches.
10-gallon batches. Okay. Oh, wow. So making the move out here, you really wanted to get into a little bit more space. And you said you were a homebrewer for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about your time homebrewing. And I guess what made you make that transition from homebrewing to, I'm going to start, I guess, the third brew pub in Greensboro proper, or second mm-hmm. in downtown?
I mean, I got into homebrewing. You know, I've always enjoyed beer. Most of us, when we start drinking beer when we're 21 or sometimes a little younger than that, you know, we tend to drink whatever we can get our hands on, and we're not real picky about the flavor of it. But I guess I got kind of picky about the flavor of my beer fairly early on. And I guess I've always been a person that likes to make things and you know, do some woodworking and some cooking and things like that. And so the idea of making my own beer really appealed to me. I also enjoy wine quite a bit. And I thought about making wine, but I realized that you can make decent wine at home, but you are never going to make great wine at home, because great wine comes from great grapes. And the people who own the vineyard that produce those amazing grapes are not going to let go of those grapes. They're going to make it into wine themselves, and then turn around and sell it for $200 a bottle. So, you know, you're just not going to be able to get your hands on really great grapes. A homebrewer has access to all the same grain and yeast and hops that any commercial brewery does.
Right.
So if you are very careful and know what you're doing, you can make the best beer in the world at home. And that's what appealed to me about homebrewing. So Like I said, I did that for 20 years and then had a career in manufacturing and worked for several different companies, and the most recent one being the one that makes a bunch of food processing equipment, and amongst that equipment is some brewing equipment. The company was actually making some equipment for Anheuser-Busch and Miller Coors for many years. And then when I got involved with them, I said, "Hey guys, what are we making for craft breweries?" And they said, "Oh, those guys, they're small, they're tiny, there's no market there." I said, "They're small, but they're starting up at a rate of about 300 a year. There's a huge market there." So we kind of downsized some of the equipment and started offering it. Helped a lot of great passionate folks get into the business of making beer, and I guess kind of caught the bug from that I wanted to do the same thing, to take my passion and translate it into something that can, you know, be shared with people.
Well, awesome. Like I said before, I really enjoy a lot of your beers. So are you the brewmaster as well, or take us in a day of life, Mark?
Yeah, no, I was a home brewer for 20 years. Mm-hmm. I knew from day one that there was a big difference between brewing 5-gallon batches and 500-gallon batches. Mm-hmm. And so from day one, I had professional trained brewing staff who were, you know, familiar with all the equipment and knew how to get the best results out of it. So I certainly collaborate with my brewers on recipes, but you know, I've got to give them 90% of the credit for all of the recipes, because they are the trained professionals.
So is there any one style you particularly enjoy that you guys make, or any one beer in particular that you make at Gibbs that you enjoy?
You know, I mean that's like asking what's your favorite child. You know,
you have one. Everyone has one. They refuse to admit it because you don't want the others to have. But it makes you feel better. The beers, they won't tell. They won't tell the other ones.
I would say probably the beer that I drink all of our different beers depending on what mood I'm in. But the one I probably find myself going back to more than others is the pale ale.
Okay, Blind Man's Holiday.
Yeah.
Now you guys won a few awards at the Great American Beer Fest a few years ago. Am I crazy on that one?
We won a gold medal for our ESB, okay, and we won a silver medal for our Medley of Moose wheat beer.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, that was. I know the ESBs. It's hard to get a good ESB around here. You guys have one, so.
Yeah, and we do it in the true English style. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, the ESB stands for extra special bitter. You know, if you know a little bit about the history of it, then it's called extra special bitter in contrast to English mild, which is a beer that has almost no bitterness at all to it. So extra special bitter really is not a bitter beer. It just has a little bit more bitterness than English mild.
Right.
But it's really a malt forward style. And that's definitely how we do it. There's a number of craft breweries that when they see the word bitter in the title, they just can't resist amping the hops up, you know. And that's just, you know, you can make a good beer that way, but it's not a true ESB.
Right. So I know we have Pig Pounder in Greensboro, and they are, at least previously, they were almost exclusively an English-style brewery. Mm-hmm. And you're saying that a lot of what you brew is a lot of very malt-forward, which I associate with the English style. Mm-hmm. Are you also being more English style, or because I'm drinking a French blonde ale, so it's not necessarily English.
Yeah, and you know, I would say of all the styles that we brew, there's probably more English in there than anything else. But you know, we've done several Belgian triples, which is obviously a you know, malt forward kind of style. Like you said, the French blonde. I'm actually drinking the Oktoberfest, which is a lager, but it's a lager with a nice heavy malt-forward signature to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So when you're developing your beers, I know like in 2 days, 3 days, 3 days, you're releasing your black IPA.
Mm-hmm.
When you're developing new beers, what's the process like?
You know, typically we're talking about what we want to come out with, just based on lots of things. You know, something that we haven't done before that we wanted to try, or that we've previously did something that people really liked, and so we want to, you know, try to come out with something that's kind of riffing on that a little bit, or just been demand because, you know, something's in the popular right now and folks are asking us to bring one out. So for whatever, you know, whatever reason, we're going to settle on a style. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we tend to, you know, go back and look at classic examples of the style and compare and contrast them and figure out, you know, what do we really like about this one and what do we really like about that one, and kind of pluck the characteristics of them that we really like and meld those together into something unique that we like to drink. And if we like to drink it, we hope other people will too.
You said you're looking at other beers that already exist in the style to sort of build a flavor profile that you're interested in building, creating.
Yeah.
So do you have any particular breweries or particular beers you harken back to as this is an exemplar of the style, or this is something we're trying to use as our base?
Not any particular breweries. I mean, it'll vary tremendously, you know, by the style of beer that you're looking at. I mean, obviously each style has certain sort of classic examples of it. And, you know, certainly when we were looking at the ESB, Fuller's was one of the ones that, you know, and of course I don't know that ours is very much like Fuller's, but there was just a couple of little traits of Fuller's that we liked that we tried to put in there.
Right. Yeah. Now, for my own personal edification, what did you base the milk stout on? Because like I said before, that's one of my absolute favorite milk stouts.
I don't know that the milk stout was, I don't know that that one was so much based on looking at other beers so much as there are 12 different grains in that one.
Wow.
So that one was really one of saying, all right, you know, we're really going to layer in as much complexity in this one as we can kind of get away with it and not being too busy. So we're going to take a little bit of this, and that's going to add some chocolate, and we're going to take this, and that's going to add a little bit of smoke, and we're going to take this, and that's going to, you know, add a little bit of coffee and so forth. So that's what we're going for with that one. Okay. And then just enough of the lactose to try to, you know, balance it out. We always like our beers to be balanced.
Right.
You know, we really don't like to do things that are absolutely hammering you over the head with hops or with heat from alcohol or whatever. We like our beers to be balanced. So that's that one, you know, it was getting awfully roasty. So you know, we made it a milk stout and leavened it out a little bit.
That's good. Because I know with my home brewing, I can't get, I've only been able to get the hops down once. Everything else is, I like my beers bitter. So that's a personal,
sure.
thing. What was it like making that transition from home brewing to brew owner?
You know, I would say that it wasn't really so much a transition from home brewing to owning a brewery as it was a transition from having a day job to, you know, starting a business. So, you know, I love the brewing, but you know, unfortunately, that's a small fraction of what I'm involved with these days, just because there's so many other moving pieces involved in a brewery. You know, we're always out there trying to kind of get the word out about our brews, and with so many breweries out there now, you know, it's not enough to make a great beer. You got to let people know that you have it, and kind of shout from the rooftops to let them know, or no one's going to know that you're there. You know, so time is you know, out in the market and meeting with bar owners and restaurant owners and talking to them about the beer. And it was definitely a transition for me because I was involved in manufacturing and industrial products and things. I had never been involved in a consumer product like this. So it's very satisfying to know that you're making something that people really interact with the product and enjoy it a lot, as opposed to making a pneumatic cylinder that people don't even know it's in the product that they bought, you know, unless it breaks. So it's very satisfying, but you know, it's also very different. I had to kind of learn a whole new way of doing things.
Right. I work for a grease trap manufacturer. I'm very much aware of products that are behind the scenes that no one ever wants to see. Yeah. Why did you choose the name Gibbs 100?
I'm a history buff, and 100 is an old subdivision of a county or shire. You know, we wanted to be a community brewery, so we felt like 100, you know, which of course the name originally came from, that it was an area that was roughly the size to support about 100 homesteads. Hmm. You know, we felt that evoked a nice, small, tight community. Thomas Jefferson was a big advocate of hundreds, and if he had had his way, when they laid out all the maps, and you know, you fly over the middle states now and you see the big square grid that everything's laid out in, he would have organized everything on the basis of hundreds instead of townships, so that people kind of had their government at a smaller, more local type level. Mm-hmm. So we kind of like that idea. We wanted to be a community brewery. So
is there any beer style in particular that you haven't brewed yet, at least here? I know homebrewing, you've probably brewed a bunch of different things, but at Gibbs, is there anything you've wanted to brew that you haven't gotten to brew yet? Any particular style or beer in particular?
Yes, we definitely have done some sour beers, and I enjoy sour beers very much. We have done some, but they've been lacto beers. So
can you explain that?
So done with lactobacillus, mm-hmm. which is going to give a fairly clean tartness to it. So
as opposed to like a Brettiomyces, which is
opposed to Brett, which is going to give you kind of those funkier and barnyard mm-hmm. type aromas and flavors. I would love to do something with Brett. I enjoy that. Now, you have to be careful with Brett, and you can get your entire brewery infected, and once you do...
And you're a Brett brewery.
Yeah, and you know, you can't make Brett ESB. That's not a thing, so...
I mean, you can try. I don't know how... You know what? Let's do it. Let's try it. It's a very small batch. Let's give it a shot.
So, I mean, that's why a lot of breweries that are handling Brett will have a off-site facility that they don't even bring it in to their brewery.
Right.
So I would love to do that. We haven't gotten there yet. Like I said, we've done some sour beers, but not Brett.
Okay. So when people visit Gibbs, or when they're drinking Gibbs out of the can, if they find one at their local grocery,
sure,
bottle shop, what have you, what do you want them to experience? What are you hoping every time someone pours a glass of Gibbs beer?
I think what we're trying to do is, like I said, the most of the styles that we're putting out there are ones that are they're drinkable beers. Mm-hmm. Recently did an Imperial Stout that was 9.5%, but most of what we're doing is, in the 5 or 6% range, a little bit higher for an IPA. Most of what we're doing, like I say, is not blasting your palate with bitterness. Even the IPAs and pale ales will do more dry hopping so that you're getting more of the hop aroma and flavor and not as much of the bitterness of it, So we try to do things that are drinkable so that you might want to have, two or three of them. And I think that's what we figure we've succeeded if you want to have two or three of them. And also, probably just as importantly, if you go back and buy another six pack of it a few weeks later, it tastes the same. Consistency from batch to batch is very hard in a small brewery, but we work very hard at it, and I think and hope that we do achieve that.
I have told this story before on the podcast, but we had this brewery in Raleigh I used to go to, and they're no longer a brewery. They mm-hmm. had a great location, beautiful, but their quality control was absolutely terrible. You go 1 week, get a beer, come back 3 weeks later, get the same beer, what you think is, but it's from a different batch, and it tastes just awful. It wasn't flat or anything. It didn't even sit in the keg.
It doesn't even have to taste awful.
Yeah.
I mean, if you order a beer and you liked it, and then you order it again a week later, and it tastes different, and it's still good, but it's different, you say to yourself, man, I'm rolling the dice every time I order this. I don't know that I want to take that chance. Yeah. So
as a small brewery, how do you do quality control from batch to batch?
Obviously, if you're a large brewery, you're going to do blending. Mm-hmm. And you can ensure complete consistency if you're blending everything. We don't have that luxury, so we just have to be really careful, trying to make sure that we're keeping an eye on all of our raw ingredients, the grain and the hops and so forth, and the specs on those, because obviously those are all agricultural products that change from year to year and harvest to harvest, so we got to make sure that we're making adjustments to the recipe to account for that, and not just going forward with a new harvest of grain and not even trying to adjust properly. We try to be very, very careful about our times and temperatures of everything, make sure that we're recording everything and being very consistent with that, and then I guess at the end of the day, if we fail on something, you got to be willing to either dump it if it's just not good beer. Thankfully, I think maybe one time we had to actually dump it. There have been a number of times where we say to ourselves, this beer right here is still good beer, but it's not true to brand. So we're not going to put it out there as ESB or whatever. What we're going to do is we're going to take this as a base, and we're going to take it in a totally different direction and make a different beer out of it. Use a different hopping schedule on it or something, or maybe put some fruit in it or some addition or something like that. Make it a completely different beer that's still a very good beer, but we know we missed the mark in terms of, hey, that was not going to be Blind Man's Holiday, so let's just make it something else.
Okay. So how do you catch it in the, before you go to the, it sounds like you're catching it almost before you go to the boil kettle. You're catching it in the, while you're making the wort.
Sometimes. I mean, you're typically, catching it in the fermenter, mm-hmm. early in the process. You've got it in the fermenter, and and you're tasting it right out of the fermenter, and you're saying this is not right. So
you must have a good palate then for that.
We work on it. You know, I mean, I think anybody can have a good palate. It's more a matter of training than anything of you know, being very observant and of what you're tasting and trying to calibrate things and then.
I guess the last question I really have is there anything else you want people to know about Gibbs, or is there any events you have coming up in, I guess, February and beyond that you want folks to know about and to come out for?
Well, we've always got events and things coming up. I guess in terms of beers, we've got a sour Belgian red, Brick Dust Red, that's coming out on the 19th of this month. We're going to be bringing out our Fox in the Morning Saison again. Next month, we have our milk stout going into cans starting next month. So I guess that's kind of new things on the horizon as far as brewing. As far as the tap room, we've always got events going on. One of our favorite events that we get in here several times a year is the Greensboro Ladies Arm Wrestling League.
I saw the flyer.
They will be here in February. That's always a rollicking good time. They put on a very good show. We try to do music most Fridays and. So, yeah.
Awesome. Before we say goodbye, I am drinking your the French Blonde, and I'm enjoying this beer. What can you tell me about it? Finish up my last Swiss sip.
I think every beer is tends to be either defined by its malt or defined by its hops or defined by its yeast. Mm-hmm. And I think that is very much a yeast-defined beer. So, it's got a nice malt and wheat backbone to it, but we really try to let the yeast get the right yeast and then let it come forward and it express itself. There are a few breweries that will tend to try to do everything with the house yeast because that certainly does save you some money, but I don't know if you're doing anybody any favors if you're doing a French blonde with a pale ale yeast.
No, not at all. I know I've used the same yeast twice, and that's about it. Yeah. I like using different yeast, different hops. All yep. that. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, Mark. It's been
Alrighty.
An absolute pleasure.
We want to thank Mark again for that wonderful interview, and we are super excited. We have a couple of cans of Gibbs beer here right in front of us, so we're going to hop right into our tasting.
First beer of the night is our Rock 92 brew. So this is an English-style session ale, 4.0% ABV, no IBUs available for this one. It's actually brewed for a local radio show of ours, two guys named Chris on Rock 92. It's kind of an oldies, not even oldies really, classic rock radio station. Here in Greensboro, it's a brewed to be a premium beer you can pace yourself with. Smooth malt with a touch of caramel, balanced by noble golden hops.
So this is my first time having this beer. What about you, Trav?
Well, yeah, I think this is the first time for me as well. I don't know why I've never gotten this one out of all the Gibbs beers, but yeah, it just smells actually a little caramelly, which is surprising because it's kind of more golden in color. It's not exactly clear, though. It's a little hazy.
They don't pasteurize or filter their beer. It's all unfiltered. It's on their cans, actually. Unpasteurized, unfiltered. Mm. And that's a big thing for Mark, which really impacts his distribution that we talked. I think we talked briefly about that.
It smells actually, I want to say almost like a tiny bit banana-y.
Maybe. That would be the yeast, most likely.
That's actually a little more bitter than I was anticipating. And it's not as caramelly on the palate as I thought it would be after smelling it. I actually kind of like the aroma more than I'm... But the bitterness does fall away.
Yeah,
it's kind of... It is more of like a really... When they say English style, this is maltier than you would expect, which I guess lends itself to that British style of beer where everything is more malt forward.
Yeah, and that's probably what they're going for. They are more malt-forward, English-style brewery. That's pretty nice. It's the first time I've had it. I didn't know anything about it. I think I saw it at the pub, just in cans.
A few of the times I've been there, they have it on tap, and then it always... I think it never fails every time I'm over there. Like, one of the main beers is not on tap. Like, they've run out and don't have a keg available. So it like rotates between the Monkey's Fear, the Rock 92 brew, and like their ESB. Overall, that's not bad though. 4%, that's really low. That's extremely drinkable.
I think that's what they were going for, really.
Mm-hmm. That's why they called it a session ale.
And Paceable. Yes.
Oh, yeah, Paceable. That. Yeah.
Well, let's move to their award-winning ESB. This is the Guilty Party. It's a 5.1%, 37 IBU, 14 SRM.
14 SRMs?
SRMs. They took her SRMs.
I don't even know what a SRM. What is SRM?
It's the color. It's a color rating.
14 colors.
It is 14 full colors. 14 on the color scale. Yes. It's a gold medal winner at the Great American Beer Festival in 2015. So this is one of their first, to my knowledge, this is the only time they've won medals at the GABF. They won two that year. The gold for this, and Mark mentioned it, I forget. They got a bronze or a silver for something. The Melody of Moods, I think. Their wheat beer. Yeah, mm-hmm. I wish it was their stout, though, but... So this is charmingly drinkable and pleasingly full-bodied. Has a balanced caramel, nutty, and biscuit flavor with an assertive bitterness. This uses English and Belgian malt and indie golding hops with an English yeast. So these are the indie hops, so they're really into like the eclectic music.
I was going to say, how is that different than the regular noble golding hops wear crowns and the indie ones are wearing those round glasses and suspenders while on their typewriters?
I assume they're like very similar to like Kent Golding pop, but whatever.
Yeah, that's that is nuttier. That is more caramel, and I will give them the biscuit.
Wow, that's very...
It smells kind of almost like not overly buttery shortbread.
Yeah, I can't pick up anything on the nose, but that's just me.
No. So as far as ESBs go...
It's good.
Yeah, it is good, and I think this is probably like their most well-known beer. I think this is like the beer that everybody goes after. And the can's pretty cool. It's the wolf in sheep's clothing. Actually, just
yeah, sheep. It's literally skin. A wolf wearing a...
Sheepskin?
Yep.
A little lammy.
What's your guilty pleasure?
Ooh, he's guilty of murder.
Is he? He just found that corpse and put it on.
He found that skin. All right. This is a... Yeah, as far as ESBs go, this is pretty good.
I think it's better than some of the English ESBs I've had.
Yeah, and it's like we've talked about before, like back in the Green Man episode, where like ESB is one of those styles that people either get right or they get wrong. There's not really a whole lot of in between, and I think they've got it right. Actually, the nuttiness kind of builds as you keep drinking it.
I noticed that. It was a lot more nutty, a lot more caramel than I was expecting as I drank it. But that brings us to our last beer of the canned beers that we could get for our Gibbs.
This is the Monkey Sphere IPA, 6.7% ABV, huge tropical fruit aroma, floral hop dominated by citrus and pine. It uses mosaic and crystal hops. Munich and crystal malt gives tastes of smooth caramel, toasty biscuit, and graham cracker flavor. The yeast imparts a dry and fruity finish. A Monkey Sphere is a play off Dunbar's number, which is the number of stable relationships an average person can maintain. Typically, this is around 150. That is being extremely generous, as I think mine is probably like 10.
You can do more than that.
Was our immediate friend group like about 10?
About 10, yeah.
Yeah, that's all I got time for.
So the can is some monkeys doing social media. They've got likes and friend requests and whatnot.
They're tweeting.
So I was curious what the name was for, or why it was named that. So I looked up what a monkey sphere is, and then it took me down a rabbit hole of Dunbar's number, and yes, that's my life.
I don't even know who Dunbar is. But yeah, that I was always actually wondered where they got that name. I thought it was just some random thing they made up.
Nope. It's typically the number of stable relationships you can have.
Woo, that is floral.
That is, I got a lot of tropical fruits, not like your mangoes, your guava type on the nose. Maybe some apricot?
Yeah, it is like that meatier tropical fruit, like you said, like mango, papaya type stuff. But it also does have like a fairly, the floral note is almost like a little citrus zesty. I don't know if it's not necessarily like an orange or maybe grapefruit or some other type of citrus that I'm not able to pick out.
Perhaps an orange blossom.
That would be good. I mean, like, that's almost what it is. You know, like how when you smell things like orange blossoms and like those kind of flowers, it's like the faintest aroma of the fruit of that plant. That's kind of what it is. Like, it Floral is a very great word for this.
And it tastes similar to, it's very floral, very, I like this. It's nice.
Yeah, it's tropical. Toasty biscuit, I'm having a hard time picking out.
Oh, no, no, no. This is a very malt for, and a hot malt, hot for a beer, which is, I guess, unique for what the Gibbs is trying to do, but it's very hoppy.
Yeah, it's a departure from the two British styles we've just had that are way more malt forward. I will say there is like the slightest bit of butteriness that I guess you can attribute to biscuit or even like the graham cracker type flavor.
Well, that takes us to the end of our tasting. We had a great interview with Mark, and this is a great local brewery we have, new location. They're, if you're in North Carolina, you can probably find them. They're doing a pretty good job with distribution.
You can probably do. Oh, I thought you meant like find the brewery.
Yeah, no, no, like find their beer, sorry.
Like your Google map should probably most likely take you where it should be.
I mean, they did just move, but...
well, their website's up to date.
It is, it is, location-wise at least. But yeah, so Travis, final thoughts on Gibbs?
I mean, it's a good brewery. Greensboro, we seem to have a lot of breweries now, and some tend to get lost in the noise. I always forget about Gibbs sometimes because it's off the beaten path for where like the majority of our other breweries are located. Mm-hmm. You know, like most of our stuff's downtown, and they used to be right downtown, so they were right in the thick of it. But they've kind of removed themselves for, you know, their various reasons that they had. But I mean, it's, they're still in a great spot, and their new building is huge. You know, they've got all the room in the world that they need for canning and storage and production. I like their beer. It's solid. Their ESB, you know, they're doing British style beers for the most part. And their Oktoberfest I had back when it was on tap. And that was actually a really good Oktoberfest. And I think that actually, if I remember correctly, it was them or another brewery in town that it actually counted as a fest beer. I can't remember. I feel like it was them or another one, but... yeah, no, a solid brewery all around. Andrew, what do you think?
They're good brewery. I think they brew a style I'm not overly fond of. With the high malt forward, I'm typically more of a hop head, I guess traditional hop head. My favorite beers they have, they don't can. But I've been there a few times recently, tried a lot of their new stuff, and they've got a lot of fun things that they're popping out. They're trying new things. But the heavy malt focus of the brewery is not my personal cup of tea, but it's really good for what it is, which is a good malt forward brewery. And I greatly thank Mark for interviewing with us, because it was nice to see that that style is what they're going for, because it's clearly well made and it tastes good. It's just not, as we've said before, it's your own palate. Your palate's your palate. It's just not my personal cup of tea, but the beer is really good. And I've been there, I guess, 3 times in the last week and a half. So I can't say I don't like it.
Can't say you don't like it, because you pretty much taken up shop in there now.
Yeah.
Well, I hate I missed the interview again. Andrew's done the bulk of the work for the pod to start the year off, and that's probably not going to change. but it's my first episode back, baby.
You, that's what you think.
That is what I, what, my first episode back?
Yes.
It technically kind of is?
Yes, it is. It all is. Right. Well,
that's what I think, because it's true.
Yes. Well, that wraps it up for Gibbs. I think we're done here.
Yeah. Thank you guys for listening. Tune in next week and join us again. Thank you for listening to this week's Brew News.
If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to subscribe and give us a rating in whichever app you found us on. We value your feedback, and it also helps the show reach more listeners.
If you have any thoughts or suggestions for future breweries or are with a brewery and would like to join us, feel free to tweet at or follow us on Twitter @brew_news.
We are on Instagram @brewnewspod, and you can visit our website, brewnewspod.com, where we will post links, photos, and tasting notes.
You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whichever podcast platform you use.
Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week with more exciting brew news.
Cheers.
Clink. Ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-bow!
Have you ever wondered how you could join the Brew News crew? Well, swing over to patreon.com/brewnewspod and you can join us.
We have three different tiers for all of our patrons. At the lager level, you earn early access to all of our podcast episodes. At the IPA level, you get early access to our podcast episodes, but you get special weekly beer tastings that are done by various members of the crew. And you get special video presentations, including our Beermas special. At the stout level, you get everything you get at the IPA level, but you also get to appear on one episode of the Brew News Pod, and when we have some swag, we'll send some your way. So feel free to swing over to patreon.com/brewnewspod, that again is patreon.com/brewnewspod, and join the crew.